You are listening to the Stetson Students Podcast, where we post all of the series and messages from our student ministry. We are a ministry connected to Stetson Baptist Church, where we are for DeLand and for Jesus. If you would like to learn anything more about our ministries, please check out our social medias or go to StetsonBaptistChurch.org.
We're great. Hey, I'm going to go ahead and tell you, we're going to be in Ephesians 4 this morning. And we, two things I want to tell you as you're flipping there. First, if you would like a notebook to take notes on, we have some in the back. All you got to do is raise your hand and a leader will bring one to you with a pen as well. As well as want to remind you that we do have a text to questions text. If you have a question at any time during my message about what we're talking about or anything that relates to it, man, text it to 386-734-1991. And at the end, if we have some questions, I'll come back to those and answer them if I can in a quick manner. All right. So, man, that'll be here. Man, would love for you to take advantage of that at any time during our message. I want to ask this. Who in here would say I am a bookworm? Any bookworms in the room? Okay, some of you. Wow, a lot more. Man, I'm very proud of you guys. Can I tell you, when I was growing up, man, I hated books. My mother would literally have to pay me to read books. At some point, she was literally like paying me for how many chapters of a book I read because she knew that I probably wasn't going to make it all the way through. And so I used, it was called, something notes, quick notes or Spark Notes. Yes, I use Spark Notes for every book report I ever did. It was awesome. Do not do that. Read the book, okay? But if you need a little fresh reminder of a chapter, go use Spark Notes. But hey, as I grew up and got into college, man, I started to really enjoy books. And to this day, I still do enjoy reading. It's hard to get myself to read sometimes, but when I'm actually reading, I'm really enjoying it. So I don't know if you need any motivation to read, try it, because usually you really enjoy it while you do it. And then you just forget it when you're done reading. You're like, oh, I hated that. But you really did enjoy it and you learned something. And so when me and my wife got married, one of the gifts that we had on our, I don't know if it was on a registry or just something that I was gifted, it was the full collection of the books of Narnia. And so C.S. Lewis wrote, he's a writer in the books of Narnia, the Chronicles of Narnia. They are a story that really are embodied and really just kind of like a fantasized version of Christianity. And it's a great story. And if you ever want a book recommendation, man, I recommend. There's 7 of them. I know it's a lot, but they're very good and they're written very easy to read. And what I realized is I really enjoy stories. I don't read enough fictional books or fantasy books. I really want to read more because when I do, I really enjoy it. And I don't know about you, man, stories to me really resonate. And as we get into today, I thought about a story that I read about, and it's a story of a pastor who was in Texas, and his name was Matt. It's Pastor Matt, and Pastor Matt was pastoring this church, and for some reason that church was just shrinking, and it was really dying. It was a church that it just wasn't going anywhere. It wasn't growing, and he felt like each week he left the pulpit and the church, and he was just very weary. And he felt like, man, the church is not being what the church should be. It's not exciting. And he had no real zeal to be in the church every day. And then he was even talking to some of the leaders around the church, and they were kind of expressing the same thing of, we don't know what's happening, but there's just this emotion around the church of things aren't going well. And he was sitting at his desk one day, and a high school girl named Mia walked into his office. And Mia, she was a staple for their student ministry. She was somebody that was there night in, night out. The student ministry was kind of like a revolving door where some people would come, and it usually was Mia was inviting them, and then they would just not stick around, and they would leave. And so, but Mia was this kind of staple. You knew she was going to be there, and she was going to be leading in some way. And so she sits at the desk with Pastor Matt, and she goes, Pastor Matt, man, I just want to know, like, how can I help the church? What can I do? Hey, I see that this church is not doing what it's supposed to be doing. It's not very fun. And really, there's just this kind of lull around what the church is doing. And we're not seeing numerical growth, and we definitely aren't seeing spiritual growth. So Pastor Matt kind of thinks through, and he goes, you know what, Mia, you're doing a great job. I don't want you to worry about anything. You just keep being a student. You just keep going to youth group and keep doing what you're doing. Invite people and, you know, just be a student, be a teenager, okay? Don't worry about this. And she goes, Pastor Matt, no, I really want to help. I really want to put in some effort and see if I can do anything to help this church. So Pastor Matt goes, you know what, Mia? All right, well, how about this? I'm going to kind of send you out, and I'm going to let you take kind of lead around here. Not in a sense of on Sunday mornings or anyway, but like serving the community and being a part of the movement of the church. And so she kind of spearheads this movement to take the church into the city. And when she takes the church into the city, she starts to serve the city, and the city starts to respond by saying, like, what's happening at that church? Why are they loving us so well? And what it actually ends up happening is, over the months, as Mia helps spearhead some initiatives, the church grows exponentially, but not just numerically in the number of people that come, but also there's true spiritual growth that happens in that church. And we see it, and it continues to grow and grow and grow. And really, it all comes back to being credited to Mia wanting to take action and wanting to be a part of the church and not just sit silent as she watches her church do things, but she wanted to be a part of helping the church. The truth is, the story's not real. I made this story up. Ha ha. But this story is not just one story, but this story is many stories. There are many churches that, though I didn't name real people or real situations, would say, that was us. And that happened. That just happened here. And my name's not Matt, and her name's not Mia. Listen to me. What I want to tell you, and why I'm telling you this story, is you right now are at an incredible church. And I'm telling you, Stetson Baptist Church is such a good church. And I'm sure many of you could share that same emphasis of like, man, I really love the church that I'm at. I hope you can. Man, I hope you enjoy being here at Stetson Students. I know that I enjoy you being here. And though our church is not like Matt's church, we are actually growing in every way, again, not just numerically, but spiritually around every single ministry, which is a beautiful thing. We see God's blessing in that. But listen to me, just because we're at an incredible church, the statement is still the same. Our church needs you. Our church needs you. Here's my youth analogy for the day. You are not NPCs. If you don't know what that means, it means non-playable characters. And usually when you say that, you're relating it to a video game. Meaning you're just like, you're just there. The programmers just put you in there. You can't be played. You're just a part of the scenery. You're just a part of the story, but you do nothing. Listen, that is not us. That is not you. Man, you are a character in the game of the church. Like, we are called to be a part of the church and do things in it. And I don't want you to fall into this lie of, well, I'm too young and I just need to sit on the sidelines. And one day I'm the church of the future. And one day when I graduate high school, or when I graduate college, or when I get married, or when I have kids, or man, when I hit 40, whatever it is, whatever number you're thinking in your head, then I'll be a part of the church. But right now, I'm just kind of here. Man, that is not true. That is not true. And man, what we're going to see today as we jump into Ephesians 4 is Paul is going to tell us what the church is and it is to be. And then we are going to look at it and relate it to us, okay? So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to kind of tell you what the section is going to say, and then we're going to read it and explain it, all right? The first thing that we see Paul say is that we as the church are called to be united. We are united. If we are part of the church, we are united. Picking up verse 1, he says this, I therefore, Paul, a prisoner for the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. So if you remember last week, we talked about how God offers us the full versions of things, like character traits, attributes, things we want in the world. We're not going to find the original perfect versions of, but we're only going to find that in God. And so then he says, because of this, man, I urge you to live the life that you were called to be. Live the Christian life that God has for you. And he says, man, I want you to do it with humility, thinking of others. I want you to do it with gentleness and with patience, and even saying bearing with one another in the church. And he's not just saying this to one person. He's not just looking at it saying, hey, Nate, you need to do this. but he's saying it to everybody that's reading this. And as it gets passed on to generations and generations, and as it sits in our lap, he's looking at us saying, man, you need to live the Christian life. And here's what the Christian life looks like. And then the question comes about, okay, well, how can we all be called to live this same life? And he explains this starting in verse 4. There is one body and one spirit, just as you were called to be to the one hope that belongs to your call, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all and through all and in all. So he looks at us, he says, we are one. You are one. You are united together. Man, I can call you to be this, to live the same Christian life because we are united in Christ. And what he's really going to look at us and even says in there is it's not your work, but it's the Spirit's work in you. Listen to me. If you are a Christian in the room, God's Spirit lives inside of you. Like, it is not you. You're never alone. It's always God's Spirit with you. And he's saying, man, live this life, and you're not going to do it by your own will, but you're going to do it by the Holy Spirit's work in you. And then he says, because of this, we all have the same goal. Like, we all are looking to do the same thing, which is to love God and be loved by God and see his kingdom take over. See his kingdom of goodness, the better life that we are called to. We are called to want that for other people. And it's not just you, but it's all of us together, united together. So he says, man, we're united, but he doesn't just say that. He also says that we as a church are unique. So we're united, but we're also unique. Picking up in verse 7, but grace was given to each one of us according to the measure of Christ's gift. Therefore, it says, when he ascended on high, he led a host of captives and he gave gifts to men. And saying he ascended, what does it mean but that he also descended into the lower regions of the earth? He who descended is the one who also ascended far above all the heavens and might fill all things. I know that's a lot, but basically he's saying, man, you were given gifts and these gifts came from Jesus. And he says that by like, man, Jesus was, it says Jesus was ascended and he can't ascend unless he descended to live the life with us. He's reminding us that it is not our work that earned these gifts, but it was Jesus's work in us that earned these gifts for us. Therefore, he freely gives these gifts. And then he lays out some of them. He says this as we pick back up. And he gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the shepherds, and teachers to equip the saints for the work of ministry, for building up the body of Christ. So he looks and says, here are some of the gifts that God has given you. Here are some of the things that God has granted the church, saying this is what we need. Therefore, like, all these things unique in their nature, and if they're not present, the church is not present. But listen, it is not limited to this list, because we hear these lists of like apostles and teachers, and we go, well, maybe that's not me, evangelists and whatnot. Like, we look at this and we go, well, I know that's all a part of the church. Let me tell you, there are things that you are called to use your passions and your desires and your strengths to benefit the church, because you've been uniquely wired and the church needs you. Yes, we are united together with the same call, but we are uniquely designed with certain strengths and even some certain weaknesses. And then he continues by saying, these gifts aren't just given so that you can have them, but they're given so that we can build one another up. Like, they're given for the benefit of one another. Think about this. Like, think about some of the things that you're good at. Think about maybe some of the ways that you can use that for the church, and understand that's not just for you, but that's for everybody in this room. Like, we are better as a group if we all bring our strengths together, if we all bring what makes us to the table. We are better when we are bringing in our unique skill sets and using them for each other. So we're united, but we're also unique. But not only that, we have a purpose. So we're united, we're unique, but we also have a purpose. He finishes the section saying this, starting in verse 13. And so we all attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to mature manhood, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, so that we may no longer be children tossed to and fro by the waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by human cunning, by craftiness and deceitful schemes. Rather, speaking in truth, with truth in love, We are to grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and held together by every joint in which it is equipped, with each part is working properly, making the body grow so it builds itself up in love. I know it's a lot. There's a lot that he said there, but really, he's looking at it and he's saying, these gifts that you've been given are for you to grow in your faith. Like the gifts that you've been given, again, they're for each other, but and they help you grow in your faith. And he uses these two pictures of like, man, we don't want to be children who are tossed to and fro by the winds and by the waves of deceitfulness. And he uses a lot of these things that the world is going to try to use against us. But then he says, but man, if you enjoy the unity of the church and the uniqueness of one another and embody those things, we get to be a part of our purpose, which is to be secure in what we believe. Like being secure to know that, man, no matter what happens in my life, no matter what temptations or trials or stress that I go through, I know what I believe and I know it is true. To be able to withstand the temptations of Satan. Like, listen to me, you have an enemy and it's Satan. That's not just like some far out thing. Like he is literally against you and he is using things around you to try to get you away from Jesus. He doesn't want you to know the joy and life that is better with Jesus at the center of it. But our purpose is to know that, to withstand those temptations with the Holy Spirit, and in the end, live the life that Jesus has always had for us. The life that looks like following him day after day, decision after decision, modeling our lives after what he has taught us to do, and having faith that we could not earn anything on ourselves, but only by Jesus' life, death, and resurrection could we ever do anything. And so, man, we need to see the beauty that the church offers, which is that we are all, in our individual stories, united together, coming in with unique perspectives, unique strengths, unique skill sets, joining together in that, walking together with one singular purpose, to love and be loved by God and make his kingdom known to those around us. Make his kingdom known to DeLand, Florida. Make his kingdom known to DeLand High or DeLand Middle or Stetson Christian School or Southwest or in your home or in your neighborhood. That is our purpose. So what do we do with this? That's awesome. I love that. But what do we do now? Here's what we do. For you, hear me. Be the church now. Be the church now. I'm so tired of people saying that you are the church of the future. You are not. You are the church of now. You are a part of the church. Avoid and get rid of this lie that you are too young to make a difference in this church and in this community and in your schools. You are not too young. Man, you are the church now. I love that Paul talks to Timothy in 1 Timothy and he says this, let no one despise you for your youth. Let no one despise you for your youth. But instead, set believers an example in speech and conduct, in love and faith and in purity. In a sense, he's saying, man, don't let somebody despise you, but instead, show them how to live the life of a Christian. Prove them wrong. Let them see you and say, man, this person, though they're young, and they're making a difference. And we are not called to sit on the sideline. I told you that Satan's a real force and he is against you. Let me tell you, Satan wants you on the sidelines because Satan knows the difference that you can make in your church, in this ministry, in your small groups, in your schools, in your community, in your neighborhood, and in this world. Satan knows what you offer and what you can offer. Man, I want you to know what you can offer. We need you in this church. When I think about like, what would it look like to sit on the sidelines? I think about some of the biblical characters. I think sometimes we can think biblical characters are older than they are. Like I imagine like what would have happened if David sat on the sidelines? If you don't know, David was chosen to be king when he was a teenager. David took down Goliath when he was a young boy. Now, what would have happened if David said, you know what? I don't want any of that. I just kind of want to sit back here. I'm not old enough. I'm not mature enough. What would have happened if he did not take action? What about this? What about the disciples? Did you know that disciples were between 13 and 15 years old? Like, think about that. The people that Jesus chose to move his ministry when he left started at 13 and 15 years old. What happens when he dies, and even when he comes back, what happens when they spread out and they say, you know what, I don't want this. I'll let somebody else do that. What about Timothy? As we look to this, Paul chose Timothy as his kind of proxy when he was in prison. So many people, like many churches, were mentored by Timothy. That's why Paul wrote what he wrote to Timothy. Don't be despised. Don't let anybody despise you for your youth. I chose you for a purpose. Don't sit on the sidelines. And listen, the church needed them, and the church needs you. And am I telling you that you're going to be the king of a nation? No. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know what you do in your free time. But I'm telling you, what's true is the church needs you. And it's time for us to take action. And here's what taking action looks like. Three things and we'll be done, I promise. First thing, be here. In order to take action and be a part of the church, you need to be in the church. Some, you know, I'm a statistics guy probably, but I looked at the statistics of millennials versus Gen Z, and millennials, it said 39% of churchgoers came on a weekly basis. That number has dropped to 25%. So we've seen a 14% drop off of people saying, man, I don't go on a weekly basis, but I'm still part of the church. And we've actually seen the number of people that never go in Gen Z grow to 49%. So almost half of your generation is saying, I don't want to be a part of the church. And we must be in church. Can I tell you, Satan does not want you here. Satan wants to distract you. Satan wants to tell you that you're too busy. Satan wants to tell you that, man, I want you to procrastinate your schoolwork or your practices or whatever, so that you're not here, so that you're not being taught, so that you're not learning what it looks like to be a Christian. He wants to distract you. He wants to create excuses, and he wants to play with your emotions. He wants you to go, man, it's not that big of a deal. No, I don't really want to be there. He does not want you here. And the reason is this, because the church is where you are taught how to follow Jesus. It's where you are encouraged to continue to do so. And it's where you're convicted in the parts of your life where you're not following Jesus. Man, the church does that for us. And if we are not a part of the church, many of these things, though I'm not saying they can't be present, they're going to be very minimal. I mean, if you want to know how to take action and be the church now, first you have to be here. Next, man, serve here. Listen to me. The church isn't just about what it can do for you, but it's about what you can do for it as well. Listen, I know so many of you have so many great skills and passions and strengths. Man, put them to use here. Use them in the church. Man, we'd love to see what that looks like for you. Man, if you're like, nah, I have this skill, but I don't know how it works for in the church, man, come talk to me. I'd love to figure out what does that look like for you to use that skill set in here. Man, there are so many ministries that you can be a part of and that you can serve with, and I would love to see how I can plug you into those. Man, we would love to see the next generation, the now generation, serving in the church on a weekly basis. Man, that would be so awesome to see. I would love for that to happen. But not only just serving that way, but also, man, how you worship and how you pay attention in here and over there. Listen to me. Do this. Do we have any seniors in the room? Okay. Do we have any juniors? Oh, Justin. Okay, great. Here's what I want everybody to do. I want everybody to think about what grade you are in and then look at somebody that you know is younger than you. I know that can be tough. Some of you are like, I don't know what grade these people are in. If you're in sixth grade, it doesn't matter. I get it. Listen to me. Do you know that those people that you're looking at are looking up to you? The person that you just looked at is most likely looking up to you. Hey, and sixth graders in the room, think about this. Everybody in that kids ministry is looking up to you. They're saying, man, how are they living? How are they worshiping? Man, are they taking notes? Are they on their phone during service? They're looking to you and looking up to you. Man, you know how you serve them? By doing those things well. By worshiping openly and freely. By paying attention and gathering what is being taught. Now, I'm not just saying that because, man, I want you to do it. I'm saying it because it's good for you as well. Man, so be here, serve here, and lastly, grow here. I love what J. Garrett Kell said in his book about this, and we've seen this quote before, but I love it. It says, "The church is a primary means God uses to help you persevere in the faith and be conformed to Jesus. You will not grow in purity or maturity apart from gospel community." Listen to me. If you want to know, man, how do I grow better in my faith? It's here. It's in church. It's being a part of this ministry. It's being a part of Sunday morning ministry. It's being a part of small groups. It's being a part of Bible studies. Man, we, as part of as the church, are where we are called to grow. And it will not take place outside of the walls of fear. I want us to, as we close, I want us to think back to our story about Mia. And what if Mia had not taken that the calling of being a Christian seriously? What if she had just sat like every other teenager in their youth group and said, you know what? The church is kind of falling apart, but it is what it is. I can't do anything about it. But she didn't. She took her calling as a Christian seriously. And what I'm saying is, and let that be you. Let that be us. As we are part of an incredible church, and I would love for this church to see the benefit and the greatness that is taking place in your generation. And it starts with us. It starts with you. And you are not called to be on the sidelines, but you are called to be great in the church of today. You're not just what's next, and you truly are the church of right now. Hey, in order to do something about that, we have to believe it. And if you at all are saying, man, I don't know what I believe in that, or even this, man, in order to be a part of that, we have to be a part of the unity that Christ offers. And if you've never made that decision of giving your life to Jesus, man, I would love to talk you through that right now. And we're going to sing. We're going to sing about the unity and the relationship that belongs in God. And what a beautiful thing that we get to relate that back to us, of how we are called to be unified and relational with one another. I'm going to pray for us. Let's close, all right?
Thank you for listening. We hope you have a great week and that you are a light for Jesus. Grace and peace.